Welcome back, everyone. Chris Matthew with Forbidden Knowledge News. We're having a great time at the Laughlin UFO Mega Conference. Last night was amazing. We went out on a Skywatch with Generation 3 military grade night vision goggles with this gentleman here, Michael of Sedona. He runs the Sedona UFO tours. And man, I saw more than I've ever seen on any night Skywatch before. What made you really just want to get started doing Skywatch? You told us last night,
you decided
to get out of the line of work you were doing because basically harming people.
Yes. Right. So in through the entire decade of the 80s, I worked for a DOD contractor doing missile and satellite systems engineering. So I was involved in several missiles, everything that hangs out an F-14, I was involved with it somewhat. The HARM missile, the Phoenix missile, doing standard missile, doing the augmented weapon system, doing coding in several languages. Also, I sealed the Galileo probe that went to Jupiter, for instance, and the very first satellite that the space shuttle, the very first time it used that new robotic arm and it picked up a satellite and brought it into the bay, that was the Spazo 1 satellite. Two people and me built the whole thing. So, I mean, I've been involved in the satellite missiles for a long, long time. I decided to retire in 1990 after getting my degree in computer science. For a couple of reasons, but one of them was I figured I had built up enough karma doing missile and satellite. If I do something, I do it well. And unfortunately, that includes missiles. And I found some of the abuse that was going on in Iraq war and things like that with the things, projects that I had worked on. And it made me a little unhappy. So I decided I'm going to do something that's beneficial. So in 1990, I retired from that company, and I coined the phrase edutainment to get into production of educational materials that are fun. Because it's got to be fun so people want to come. I don't want to have to sell it. I want people to want it. So once they try it, if it's fun, they're going to keep coming back, right? So it's kind of like a carnival game. Only this way you learn something. I did over 200 CD-ROMs of K-12 custom curriculum development. So I was making animated characters. I became a 3D animator in 1990 for a company called Macromind, which became Macromedia, which you probably heard of. Macromedia was bought up by Adobe, right? So I was beta testing and developing for these companies back in the early 1990s. I became a 3D animator, and I found that kids love 3D animated characters. So I would develop these 3D animated characters to teach lessons, and they would do something, and you would have to interact as the child with the screen. You know, use the mouse, click on this button or whatever, and make a choice or whatever. So it was interactivity. So there's audio, there's video, there's animation, and there's interactivity. You want to teach a kid, that's how you do it. So I got into like Who's Who and lots of Texas schools, California schools were all using our stuff. And then a little thing out of England called Common Core came into play, and I couldn't play that game. It's not about teaching, it's about dumbing down. So I went into doing, taking my multimedia skills and going into creating tools for people in corporations to use to either teach their people or have a promotion or whatever. I love music video style production and animation. So I incorporated that kind of wow and zam, I used to call it, wow and zam, into the corporate stuff so that people aren't looking at a boring chart of profit this year. I mean, make it something like, whoa, boom, tow, you know, like, so yeah, exactly right, edutainment. So I got into, after doing the military stuff and the production stuff, I got invited by a group in Phoenix called the Inner Circle to join their group. And my wife and I were invited to join their group. And it was 15 of them until we joined. It made 17. So we're now 17, as in Q. And our job was to uncover government cover-ups. So the Inner Circle's job was to uncover government cover-ups. And in 1997, I uncovered chemtrails and started reporting on it on talk radio in Phoenix. Until every time I would then call in, I'm getting cut off. And the three-letter agency that rhymes with BKA, they threatened my life. So I decided to go on TV and start talking about it there. So I was just, it was like Cliff Carnicom on the east side and me on the west side of the U.S. talking about chemtrails, trying to wake people up to the spraying of the nanometals that's going on in our skies.
So take this back. Sorry, yeah, can you take it back just a little bit and just briefly?
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Ryder Lee from
hello, everyone. Take it back just briefly to whenever you reach out, because you were telling us last night that you met these three beings.
I just haven't gotten there yet, but we're almost there.
Okay.
So they downloaded me the math at 2 and the solar system history at 7.5, but I didn't know it. It was just dreams and just knowledge that I had as far as I knew at that time. So after getting into Inner Circle and finding Kincaid's Cave at the Grand Canyon and other things, we were exposed to balls of light flying through our bedroom and shadow beings walking through our house and invisible people with the footsteps you could hear walking past the foot of the bed. And things of this kind of nature were going on. So I was exposed to a lot of weird, out-of-the-box things. Now we come to July of 2001. I'm 42 years old at that time. July of 2001, I'm in bed at 3 in the morning, and I'm awakened in a slow awakening ramp, like I was drugged or something. And I'm awakening as I'm floating out of my waterbed. Now, most people who have gotten out of waterbeds have to work at it, you know, but I'm just moving sideways. And as I'm coming to consciousness, realizing that I'm moving sideways out of my waterbed, I hear a sound right there. It's my wife laying next to me trying to say Michael, but she couldn't because her mouth and her tongue and everything was numbed. She was just completely still and she couldn't move, but she's trying to call me. But I'm floating out the bed. Now I'm moving down the hall. As I'm moving down the hall, I start horizontal and I rotate down that hall until the end of the hall. I'm now so my feet touch the floor and I actually could feel my arms and legs, which I couldn't before that. I couldn't feel. I knew I was moving and I could see it, but I couldn't feel it. So as my feet touch the ground, all my body awakens to my brain and I realize I can control it. So I look to my right to the front door. It's locked. I look ahead of me. I look at my studio. All the flashy lights are going on. The doors are closed. It's producing, doing what it's supposed to do. There's nothing in there. But right when I glanced at the lights in the studio, my head was like being hammered from the side to go into the kitchen. So the wall is right there. I stepped right around the wall into the kitchen, and there's the 3 8-foot, very white, slightly blue, extraterrestrials. Makes you look short. Okay? So imagine, like, we don't normally look up to people, right? We kind of look down overall. So not that we look down on people, but we look down because of our natural height, right? So imagine all of a sudden you're expected to look around the kitchen and see something, and they're 8 feet tall. Their heads are this far off the ceiling in your kitchen, and there's 3 of them. And their eyes are about 25% larger than mine, bright blue with white type centers in them. The nose is half the size of mine. The mouth is half the size of mine, never moved. They had 4 fingers that were about that long on each hand and the thumb. And their clothing was the same color as their skin, that very white kind of blue, like new headlights on cars. Have you seen, you look at them, they're blue, but they're white. You know what I mean? Kind of like
that's a jumpsuit material, very fitting.
I don't know. I really couldn't tell you. It has to be some kind of material because I could tell the difference between their face and their neck in reflectivity and water, probably a watery type reflective content that was more on the outfit, but not on the skin. But I couldn't see a seam. I couldn't see where it ended one to the other. It's all the same color. Maybe that was part of being a low light scenario or something. I don't know. But
so this is when you're 41, or is it?
Yeah, I was 40.
I'm a little confused on was the timelines here, because you said that you were downloaded with a lot of information when you were really young.
Yeah.
Then again, it kind of unfolded over time. Is kind of what you're.
Yeah, that I didn't know where that information came from when I was 2 or when I was 7. I didn't know where it came from. At 2, I just had the knowledge of math. I always had the knowledge of math as far as I knew, because at 2 years old, you don't remember a whole lot before that. So at 2, I had all this math, and I was demonstrating math skills at 2. At 7, I had to download a dream of the solar system's history. So now I'm 42 years old in 2001. This is July of 2001 when I floated out of the bed. So that much time has gone in between that download and now. But I didn't know that the 2 and 7 were downloads at all until when I met these beings and they started downloading information into my head in my kitchen. That's when some of the information was exactly the same stream of video information that I got in my dream. And so it as part of an answer to a question I had asked, they include this information. It would take me probably 2 weeks to tell you what the information is, just, but it happened in 5 seconds. That's the data transfer rate. Amazing. Amazing. I'm a computer guy. I was twisting phone lines together in 1994 to make ISDN. Okay. I mean, it's like, I've been at this a long time. This was incredible data transfer.
I've had one of those and it took me days or weeks to decide.
Right, just to get it, yeah. Well, guess what? It's been 22 years and guess what? The information is still unrolling. I estimated the download at 5 exabytes of information. And for those of you who aren't number savvy or IT savvy, that's 5 million terabytes.
How do you handle all of that information at one time? How do you decipher it? Just, it was very interesting last night, at the Skywatch, where we were like, this isn't just about, seeing UFOs, seeing unexplained phenomena. It's about, you asking people to have more of this information.
Right.
Very interesting. You're able to decipher all of that and bring it up whenever it's needed.
Right. And I don't even know, a lot of the times when I'm asked a question, it's the first time I've ever been asked anything like that. And I let that go into my head, the question. I let the words go into my head, and out comes the answer. I don't even know I know. But once I say it, I know it. So someone asks the same question again, I have instant access to that what had already come out. Look, it's just, it's not me. I was just downloaded, so I just am amazed by it. And what my goal in life, because of the contact in 2001, my purpose in life changed. Everything changed. My band changed. I created a band with an alien drummer. I mean, everything changed after that that contact. But the most important thing that changed is my purpose in life changed. I'm here to help people. Help people. And the way that I have found best able to help people is by defining or clarifying the fact that fear is the great stopper of all mankind. Fear is the great stopper. What stops you from being success? Fear. What stops you from asking a girl out? Fear. What stops, however you want to extrapolate that out. Fear is a great stopper. So if you can find a way to eliminate fear, then you can reach your ultimate potential. So what defeats fear? Knowledge. Knowledge is what defeats fear, not love. Knowledge defeats fear. Because if you know there's no boogeyman, you can't be afraid of a boogeyman. Right? If you know there's no pandemic, you can't be afraid of a pandemic. Okay, you might have to edit that out. I don't know.
But here's
the thing. When you know the patterns, and you can never forget them because you have a photographic memory, when you know the patterns, it's easy to say what's coming next. So when you know that certain groups of people do this naughty thing and this naughty thing and this naughty thing, it's not too hard to figure out that this is the next naughty thing they're going to do. And that's what I write songs about in my albums and stuff. It's all about waking people up to the fact that you can figure this out ahead of time. You don't need to be surprised or be taken advantage of or be made a fool, because all the information is there.
That's what I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I want you to get out your questions before we talk about the Skywatch. So anything you have.
Just really quick. Because a lot of people last night were asking me questions about the past. I found that interesting that no one really seemed to ask you about the future.
Right. Or your perceived future.
Yeah, the perceived future. So is there anything probably should have waited until then.
Well, you can put it in any order you want.
Is there anything in the next couple of years, any big events or what do you see happening?
Okay, first of all, let me tell you a couple of the names of the songs on my latest album. Great Awakening, Fake News, Shadow Band, Do Something, okay, Q, Where We Go One, We Go All. Like, those are songs on my latest album. So what's coming up? If you read the lyrics of my latest album, you're going to know what's going to happen next year. That's the way it works. It's the things that are going to happen are fast changes in energy generation and technology storage and distribution. Hemp cellulose supercapacitors are going to become public knowledge. Yes, hemp cellulose supercapacitors are going to become public knowledge. The med bed concept of healing without using any kind of pharmaceuticals is going to be big and huge and coming. The entire Babylonian money magic system is being replaced and destroyed. Respect for God's creations are going to return. There's vast changes are going to be happening to all of society. Yes, absolutely. Because we can't let them win. Like going there. Okay, we can't let them win.
Well, we definitely live in fascinating times, and last night was proof because I saw more UFOs than I've ever seen in my life before,
right,
with your awesome guidance. Now, tell us a little bit about the experience that people could expect when they go out on a night sky watch.
Well, if somebody's never looked through third generation night vision, understand that my latest demonstration of this I did last night. Now, look with your naked eye at the Big Dipper. In the whole rectangle of the Big Dipper, how many stars do you see? And the answer is usually 8. You know, unless your eyesight isn't so good, then it could be 7. So there's 8 stars in that rectangle. Squint, look sideways. Tell me, are you sure you don't see any more stars? No, you see no more stars. Then now, put up the goggles. How many stars did you see when you put the goggles on?
More than you can count.
Yeah, 150 stars easily in that rectangle of where the Big Dipper is. So that's the, now you extrapolate that on it, light amplification. It turns out to be about 1,000-fold. So we're amplifying light 1,000 times. Arcturus is so bright it throws a halo around it. Remember we looked at the bright star right overhead last night?
Mm-hmm. And these are kind of halo. Military spec.
Yeah. This, now we do have stuff that's higher in certain ops. Being very careful here. We have like these are the PVS. You want to hand them to me? We can go ahead and talk about these a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So these are the PVS-7s. This is the ATN PVS-7. Military ground troop, U.S. military ground troop issue, not for U.S. export, night vision goggle. And not only is the tube a derivative of alien technology from 1947, but the way that the whole thing functions and the prism that divides this into each eye and all that kind of stuff is all classified to a degree that you are not allowed to take it out of the country, even parts, can't do it. It's a unique design that other countries have night vision, but this is, you know, still enough where if you bring this in your suitcase and go to Mexico, you'll be sitting in a little room for a long time, and I hope you don't need an anal probe because don't do that if you buy these. These are 1,000 times light amplification. It's 1 time size. This is the 1x objective lens. Now, I have 3x objective lenses and stuff like that for doing, but for the average person, the wiggling of it, it's tough enough for people to stand and look for an hour like that without falling over. If you started amplifying or the size, magnifying the size, it would really be problematic. But these goggles they take everything from there's a spectrum of light, so it takes everything from infrared to green and makes it green. It kind of takes everything from ultraviolet to green and makes it green. So it's, everything's green, right? You notice that. But it's all in a very tight band that's, way light amplified. We were seeing ships last night, I know, that were 800 to 1,000 miles out.
Yeah.
They're really faint dots that were moving like crazy, right? So those are 800 to 1,000 miles out that we're seeing with these.
Now, I really liked how you explained what's the difference in what we're seeing between them. So it's a plane, a satellite, or a craft.
Right.
You did a really great job of doing that, and it's so easy to tell after you explain,
right,
what you're able to see. Yeah. Point it out immediately. Mm-hmm. Could you give a little explanation of, what's the difference?
What sure. So as a pilot, one of the things that you'll know is that the FAA requires beacons and flashing lights on planes at night. And a red light on the left and a green light on the right. So when you're coming towards something, you can tell what side you're approaching. So in case you're head on or whether you're following it. The beacon that flashes, the white beacon that flashes, it either goes flash, flash, or it goes flash, 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 flash. And that, when you see that with a goggle, you might think, oh, it's a ship that's flashing at us or something. But then when you take the goggle off and look with your naked eye, because it's so close, because the planes are no more than 40,000 feet up. So they're so close that you can see with your naked eye, the flashing light going on. You go, okay, it's definitely an airplane. Now you look at the goggles again, you see it. You can remember that that's what an airplane looks like through the goggles. One exception is if the plane is flying right towards you and its landing lights are on or something, it can just look like a ship getting bigger and bigger because you can't see. So, but once all of a sudden it turns, you go, oh, it faded out. No, actually, it just turned. And now your eyes are blinded, so you can't see the little red light. Okay. So that's how you identify an airplane. Satellites, there's two basic kinds of satellites that you're going to see. There's lots of kinds of satellites, but some of them we won't go into. There's two kinds of satellites that you're going to see. One is a communication satellite, and the other is a weather satellite. So communication satellites are in polar orbits. So we're not going to see GeoSync. That's 22,500 miles out, and it sits right over the same place as Earth. We're not going to see that. It moves too slowly across the sky compared to the star field that you would see it moving. But when you have these LEO and MEO satellites, that's low Earth orbit and mid Earth orbit, then you see this like bright light moving at about 5 minutes from horizon to horizon, and it's going perfectly south to north or north to south, or within 5 degrees of north to south or south to north. Those are communication satellites. And then the other kind, the weather satellites always go from west to east. They're from about 80 degrees zenith to 45 degrees zenith, and they go from west to east. There's no such thing as a satellite that goes from east to west. The Earth is rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. It's 6 sextillion, 588 quintillion tons of mass rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. You think that creates a wake in space? Yeah, it creates a wake like a boat. It creates a wake. So a satellite would have to have thrust to constantly go against that to stay in orbit. They don't have thrust. I mean, they have minor thrust correctors that are like compressed cans of air, basically, but they don't have fuel and all that kind of stuff. So they can't be doing a track going counter-rotational.
Right.
So anything you see going in that direction is a ship.
Yes, and then we have
the 45s. They're coming in. They're going out. The
These
space station
that
runs.
Are actually, part of our secret space fleet, right?
Yeah, which is now Space Force. So we used to call it Secret Space Program, and I called it SSP on tours for years. But now that everybody knows about it, and our illustrious president was kind enough to make it a public a thing, an actual official thing, Space Force. We have my information. 2 years ago was that we had 1,200 ships in Space Force around the world, which is one force. There's Terra up there. There's no Russia and China and U.S. You know, there's factions of intelligence agencies that have controlled assets, and they're trying to do nasty things to us and stuff. And
that was the only thing disappointing to me is that it was ours, and we didn't see the guys that the last guys that you were talking about that don't go by the laws. The laws that you were talking about. Could you explain that?
Yeah. So when you see ships, you wonder. There's two kinds of ships. There's the ships that are ours. There's the ships that are not ours. Now, you're not going to see too many cabal ships up there because the Alliance is pretty well controlling space around Earth right now. So a cabal ship, which would be human in Earth, they're pretty much shut down. So there's just the Alliance out there against those not from here, right? And I call those ships exotics. I've heard they're getting pickier and pickier about what they want to be called. The extraterrestrials, we're not ETs now, we're non-Ts. It's like, come on. No, next we'll be asking for pronouns. So sorry. But what we got is just got spun off on my own joke. Because I want to go places I know I shouldn't go.
And you can the go humor, there with that.
Oh, you're good? Yeah. Okay. So uncensored. So the satellites that we identified are the weather satellites, communication satellites. So then there's the ships, and they're either our ships or off-world ships. And the off-world ships I call exotics. So the exotics will exhibit a trait, a function, a feature that our ships don't ever expose to the public. Now, they're capable of doing they're capable of that, but you're not allowed to do that while you're in orbit because they're supposed to be a secret space force. But even though it's space force, it's still supposed to be, those tic tacs, they're aliens. Those tic tacs are aliens. They're like, and they're not. Okay. So the craft, the TO3 wheels with black triangles, they're aliens. No, they're not. They're ours. So, I mean, yeah, we got the technology that source them from ET, but they're our stuff. It's all our technology. So they want you to believe otherwise. But the pilots have rules. It's like I akin it to as a pilot. If I fly into an airspace somewhere, I have to get under 250 knots. Because if you fly more than 250 knots in an airspace, you're going to get the tower yelling at you, so, or your license pulled or whatever. So that's a rule. You don't go zipping through a landing pattern or a downwind leg or whatever. You're within the rules. Well, it's the same thing with Space Force. Space Force, can you imagine a cooler job than flying spacecraft? I mean, I can't. I mean, what could be even playing on stage pales to, you know, doing like spacecraft piloting? Yes, I want it, in case you guys are listening. But the rules you have to follow are specific. And from the ground, everything is supposed to look like a satellite. Like most people just glance at it or whatever, and they would think it's a satellite. Now, we have third generation night vision, so we're cheating. Only about 0.01% of the population ever gets to look through these guys. So, like, you're special, right? So the stuff that we see, it does, you know, straight flights, or once we saw a curve, or we saw the three fly together, and yeah, we've done so. But they're nothing that went like you see on TV. That's what they do, right? Now, I have seen those happen, and they do happen occasionally, and those are exotics. And I find an average of about every 30 to 60 days that we'll see an exotic on the tour. And I mentioned, I think last night, that it was just about a week before I saw what at arm's length would be the thickness of a fingernail, a string-looking thing that had four balls, knots on it, on this little string thing. And it flew across the entire sky, 170 degrees field of view, in 4 seconds. And when it was going by, I saw it, and I tried to hit it with the laser. That's how you tell if it's a bird or a bug or something like that, because the laser will bounce off of it. You'll see it. Laser did not bounce off of it. So it was further than 20 miles out, because my laser bounces back at about 20 miles. Anything within 20 miles.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Ryder, did you have any other questions for
Michael before we turn it off? Just thank you. And I think the work that you're doing is fantastic. And I had a great time. And I would recommend your Skywatch to anybody that is looking to have an experience. Because I didn't really expect to go out there and really, you know, see much. And my mind was, you know, blown. Because we're switching off with the binoculars, and I'm like, oh my God,
check this out.
You've seen the triangle craft, like, solid. It was just the three
individuals,
triangle.
And they were moving around.
And it was spinning. It was incredible. I loved it. It was so much fun.
Well, if somebody wants to go on the tour, they can go to SedonaUFOTourGuide.com. SedonaUFOTourGuide.com and make a reservation. It changes all the time. I offer a personal tour as well as the public tour. So a public tour, I take up to 13 people or so. Each has their own goggle on my tour. They don't have to share, except for here, because we're doing it to 26 people. And so I have to, have to share. Then there's a personal tour available. It's a little more costly, but it's just your party, you know, that could reserve me. You have to have at least 3 adults. And it's in Sedona, and I do it on Airport Mesa. There's no better spot. It's the highest spot. It's full field view in all directions. No mountains are taller than where we are. That's within viewing of the sky. And we see in an hour, usually somewhere between 30 and 40 ships in an hour.
So, now, are you doing another Skywatch here this week, right?
Yes, Thursday and Friday, we'll be doing Skywatch tours, and you can sign up at the front desk.
Yes.
And this is a real deal.
Yes.
Because I charged, $88 to $100 in Sedona for this time. And here is $40.
Yeah, guys.
Smoke a deal.
We still have a few days left of this amazing conference. You can come out, check out the Skywatch. Like you said, it's only $40, and that is well worth the experience you're going to get out there of seeing craft. It was an amazing experience. So come out, hang out with us, hang out with these amazing speakers. I really hope to see you.